Welcome to the Beautifully Free podcast. I am your host, Bonnie Lee Cuevas. I am an author and a healer, and I am igniting women's fierce self-love and wild freedom through holistic and metaphysical healing. Stay tuned for today's episode. Hey everyone, I'm going to give it just a few moments. I'm really excited to be doing this with Corey. I've known Corey for a really long time, actually. We, met through... Hi, Corey! There you are. So I'm just going to give it a few minutes and see who pops on. I'm going to go ahead and invite you. Yes. Did it work?
Hi.
Hi. Oops, there's my hand there. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad to be doing this event with you today and just coming
yeah, same here.
Chatting. Oh, your space is so beautiful. I can see the background.
Oh, thank you. This is my office. It's in my basement.
It's awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. So I guess, we can just dive in and just if you want to go first and tell everyone a little bit about what you do, who you are, and, that would be great.
Sure. So, I just want to say hi, Sam. I see Sam's on. My name's Corey. I am a life coach, business coach, author, and speaker. And what I've really kind of dedicated my work to recently is teaching people how to release negative emotions like fear, anxiety, all the things that feel bad in order to kind of launch their personal growth, because really our greatest opportunity for growth as individuals is when times are tough. So instead, I really challenge people to dive head into it, into the really, really crappy parts about feeling bad, to learn more about yourself in order to become in a better place than you were before whatever it was happened.
I love that. Mm-hmm. A lot of we have similar works. It's funny because we have known each other for so long, we've sort of followed very similar journeys. Mm-hmm. So the work that I've do and have been focusing on a lot lately is healing and different healing modalities. Mm-hmm. I also wholeheartedly believe in leaning into the difficult parts and the difficult experiences, because you really come out finding out who you are and healing from that. I use a lot of holistic and metaphysical approach as well, mm-hmm, to provide you support. So it's been a really exciting journey, and I really wanted to connect today because I had you on my podcast, and I feel like we didn't even get to touch on, we had it almost 45 minutes, and we didn't even get to touch on, all of these things from divorce to narcissistic abuse, recovery, and, the really hard one, which is suicide loss. And mm-hmm. I wanted to just come on and talk more about that. And so just to let everyone know, this will also become the second segment for your podcast. So a lot of our listeners are going to be tuning in through the podcast. So I'm excited about that. But I also have notes because I'm terrible at remembering things. So I have my little notes so that I remember.
That's great.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit about divorce. I'll talk a little bit, and then I'll give you the floor. So when I was married for 11 years to my ex-husband, and, we fell in love really young. He was the love of my life. Mm-hmm. I remember when I met him, he was sitting across from me. And in the spirit of transparency, I was dating his friend at the time. And his friend actually became, he was at our wedding. And, we all stayed really good friends. And I remember the moment he walked into the room, and I was just like, oh, my gosh. And I couldn't breathe. And it was just like it was fairy tale, like I will have to say that. And I fell deeply and madly in love with him from the moment I saw him. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to marry him. And we were married for 11 years, but we were married so young, mm-hmm, that as you start to grow and grow up, you're going one way, the other person is going another way, and you see life very differently. I was a military wife. He was in the military when I met him, and, he's about to retire and all of that. So it was hard to be able to say, hey, I love you, and him say, I love you, but I don't think that we are meant to finish this journey together. And we had my son, who's now 16. And for me, I had to get to a place where I was navigating life now as a single mama. I had to be really proactive in making sure that our blended family was going to be good for our son and for all of us. And, you know, it took a lot of work. I do share pictures. I stopped sharing them like publicly. I share them more in my private Instagram, but we now go to dinner and we, you know, come together for our son at events and things like that. And, you know, it's his wife. She's absolutely wonderful. The kindest soul you could ever meet. She's also military. And, you know, it's really great for my son to be able to see that. You know, the last time we went out, it was him, his wife, their new baby, my son, my mother. So to get to that point, you know, it wasn't easy, but, you know, I'm really glad we got there. So can you tell, you know, everyone a little bit more about your journey through divorce and, you know, and then we can dive in and give them some tips on coping and healing from that.
Yeah, sure. And for anybody who didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast that I did with Bonnie Lee last week, I did make it a point to let her know, because as she said, we've both been friends for a very, very long time. And, you know, I was actually still with my ex at the time that, you know, we had become friends. And it's really like she demonstrated kind of through like what she shared on social, as far as the relationship that she had created with her ex and their son, you know, the beautiful blended family that they have. And it proved to be such an inspiration for me while I was going through what I was going through myself to know that it is possible even when things are difficult. So again, thank you, Bonnie Lee. I appreciate everything you shared on there. And I mean it. So yeah, my situation was very kind of similar in that we met very young. So I think I was 18 or 19. At the time we met, I was a freshman in college. He had actually just graduated the same school or was about to graduate the same school. And it was the same kind of situation. We just, you know, fell in love really young. We're together a long time. You know, we were together 8 years before we got married. And, you know, it was one of those things too that, you know, after 8 years, we're like, okay, well, the next step is, you know, we're supposed to get married. So that's what you do. And that's what we did. And ultimately it just wasn't going to be a good fit. You know, and as, you know, our interests changed and as we grew and matured, you know, it was just obvious to the both of us, especially when our son came into the picture, that just life wasn't working the way that we had wanted it to work. So we had decided to make the change at that point in time. And, you know, things are much better now. Actually, it's interesting. My ex is actually here right now. he's up with my son right now, hanging out and playing. So, you know, it's definitely, it's possible to, you know, be amicable, even if things are really difficult and trying, you know, during the divorce. The thing is, you got to kind of get past the bad stuff to later get to the good stuff, which is really ultimately better than whatever we had before, yeah. You know, cause everybody's happy now as opposed to before, you know, somebody was always sacrificing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really about, cause you know each other so well. So I think for us, it was a lot of times because we know how to push each other's buttons. We know so much because we were so young and we sort of grew up together. It was definitely for me, you know, holding back and saying, hey, is this really the most healthiest thing for both of us right now? Some of the ways that I coped with the divorce was, I hate to say this, but it's sort of like a rite of passage. I think everyone that goes through a divorce, I jumped into dating because I had been married for so long and experienced.
I have to ask you first before you go too far into there. So it was the same thing for me, but for me, I knew it was because like my ex-husband was one of the first serious relationships I had had. So I didn't have any of that like prior kind of dating experience. So it was kind of like that first year, I'm kind of almost embarrassed looking back on it. I was a hot mess.
Totally. Was it the same for you? I was, and my mom's like, we talk about those days, and she was like, oh my gosh, I don't even want to remember. Like, you know, it was just because I hadn't experienced that either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it again, it's like a rite of passage. Every person I have talked to that has gone through a divorce has dived right in and just started dating and realized, oh my gosh, you know, this is totally not for me. Or we go a little crazy, and then we're like, okay, let's get back to reality. And that really was, in a weird way, it helped me cope. And then it really pushed me towards healthier ways to cope and deal with it.
Right.
You know, it was the catalyst for helping me really get back to developing a spiritual practice, because I grew up in a you know, a very, not religious, we were very spiritual, but, you know, we were non-denominational Christian or Catholic at the time. And mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic. And then as I got older, Christian. And for me, I didn't really resonate that lifestyle and that part of spirituality did not resonate with me. So being able to develop my own spiritual practice that resonated with who I was and my belief system that, you know, to me, all religions hold truth. But I also feel like religion sort of boxes in, you know, something greater than ourselves or boxes in, mm-hmm. You know, just because I believe in all of us, there's God. So it was a really great time for me to develop a spiritual practice that I could hold on to and have something to give me hope and faith and, you know, just so that I can step back and really say, hey, I believe this is going to get better. I can get through this. I can really, you know, be a really good mom to my kiddo. So it allowed me the opportunity to do that and develop my own spiritual practice. So that was, you know, one of the ways that I was able to cope. But I had to go through sort of that rite of passage and go a little crazy to get to a place of, you know, hey, I need to stand on a stronger foundation. What right. are some of the ways that you coped with, you know, your divorce?
Well, the dating thing definitely played a part for me, but not so much in my spiritual practice. That really came more, you know, after my suicide loss, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But as far as my divorce goes, I mean, the dating aspect of it really helped me with my self-confidence.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
For sure, because it was one of those things that was, dating was kind of easier for me. I'm more of an outgoing personality to kind of begin with. So by being out and being more social and doing things that I was enjoying doing, and, you know, at the time here in New York, it was summer, you know, it was beautiful spending time outside at the beach. And it was just a really, really good kind of positive, fun time that helped me kind of build up my confidence in ways that I didn't even realize that I had self-esteem issues prior to that, because I was always kind of doubting myself in my relationship, you know, because if I wasn't good enough, you know, here, then I must not be good enough elsewhere. You know what I mean? So it kind of took me some time to kind of rebuild that back, which also, I mean, it helped not even just, you know, in my dating, it helped in my professional life, you know, in my career and my home, and basically everything kind of, you know, leveled up, I guess you could say, after that had happened. As far as other healing goes, I did, I really credit my therapist, who I still work with right now. Love her to death. She really helped me through in seeing, you know, exactly, I didn't realize how damaged I was as a result of my relationship. And it actually ended up becoming, and I think we talked about this more in detail in the podcast. So I'm actually going to tell everybody, you know, go listen to the prior podcast before this, to hear about that. But I wasn't even aware at that time how serious, our relationship had degraded at that point. It really took her like telling me like, hey, this is not right. You should not be talked to like this. This is not safe. In order for me to make the changes that I really needed to make. And through, you know, my therapy practice with her, which really, to be honest, it did not take me a long time. So for me, you know, and my relationship at that point was 15 years. She quote unquote graduated me that I didn't need to go anymore within 6 months. But part of that is putting the time in and making the investment in yourself. So you don't have to be going to therapy forever. The point of going is, you know, it's more or less like, you know, mental exercise. You're learning more about yourself. You're being introspective. You're making the time for it. You're feeling the really deep, dark, painful stuff. But if you don't feel it and process it and you instead repress it, that's what keeps the cycle going on and on and on and on. That things become unmanageable. The sooner that you're able to just kind of deal with it and accept it and know, okay, this is what happens. You know, this is how I feel. This is why I feel the way I feel. And, you know, in this moment, what do I think and feel I want to do next? You know, I was able to get through all of that in about 6 months, which is really kind of amazing when you think about it. And that's more what I'm trying to teach people to do today. Which it's funny because that same therapist is the one that had a conversation with me about a year ago at this time. And she's like, have you ever considered life coaching?
That's incredible.
So she more or less changed my life. So therapy was a very big part of it. I also, as far as healing from my divorce, really made it a point to expand my social circle. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not like I said, I'm a very, very social, outgoing person to begin with. So I really took advantage of that. We had moved into a new community. I didn't know anybody that was here, even though I had grown up here. So I made it a point to sign up for things like dance lessons and, you know, go out for dinner with local moms and create my own kind of support groups. And through the process, I actually ended up creating a circle of friends that were all recently divorced. So even if you can't, if you don't know a circle of people like this right away, one of the things I would usually recommend for people is try to find a local support group, like divorce support. For that in particular, there's a lot of them, they're free. They're usually run by therapists, and it's really, really helpful to kind of get on the same page and learn and hear from other people's experiences that are the same as yours to help everybody kind of involved heal. So that would be my two cents on
divorce. I love that. You know, my family became my support system for me because, you know, growing up Latina, like we're always in each other's business, but, you know, I'm very close to the women in my family. I was raised by strong women. So to be able to have that outside of your family, I think is incredibly healthy as well, you know, because you get new perspectives and you get to lean on other people and also be there for other people. And, you know, I'm really appreciative that you shared that. Mm-hmm. And I'm also very thankful to my family. I could not have gotten through that without, you know, my family and my mama. Like, my mama's my
own. Oh, of yeah. course. I mean, even for me, my family played a huge part. I mean, immediately after our divorce, I was homeless. Yeah. In Warlock. So I had to live with my family. My son was 5 months old at the time. You know, thank goodness my mom wasn't working. She actually took care of him daily until we were able to move into a home and I was able to get, you know, permanent childcare and be able to figure all those things out. So family is definitely very, very important, you know, through that process. So if you have access to them and they're offering the help, I mean, that was a big thing for me. You know, especially being, you know, proud kind of, you know, career woman, I was used to doing everything myself. You know, that was a big thing. And I had to learn, you know, in the process, it's okay to accept help. If people want to help you, accept the help when you need it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm on the same page, you know, I very independent. So I want to, you know, do things on my own and succeed on my own. So being able to ask for help and, you know, touching on that, we'll, I wanted to transition also going into, you and I both, you know, have dealt with narcissistic relationships. My ex had NPD, so that's narcissistic personality disorder. And I was with my ex-boyfriend, not my ex-husband, my ex-boyfriend for 5 years. And it was a really... It was my family that has helped me get through and leaning on them and being able to ask for help. But I wanted to touch a little bit on that. So my relationship was 5 years. And looking back, it's funny because everyone that I've spoke to and, you know, the women, my soul sisters that I get to work with, we all sort of look back and think about like, okay, that was really unlike me to, you know, accept these things or jump into this or things like that. So there's always signs and we tend not to listen to our intuition because, you know, we're like, oh no, you know, your intuition is being overprotective. You know, it's okay. Let's trust. And so a lot of what the relationship had was a lot of gaslighting. So I knew that something would happen or something was said. And then I would be made to feel like it didn't. And I would start to question my own sanity. And I'm like, okay, I know this happened. And I'd go over it and over it in my head. And I would start to feel like I'm crazy. Yeah. Another thing is, love bombing. And it was, you know, when things were bad, I mean, he could be incredibly toxic and mean and verbally abusive. And then he would come back out of nowhere because it wasn't in his nature to be a very warm, loving, you know, person. So when he would do that, he would come really strong. And I would just be like, wow, he's really trying when he really wasn't. It was a lot of manipulation because I became, you know, the sole provider financially, you know, and that was also hard, you know, because I'm taking care of my son's my priority and I'm here taking another care of another adult human being.
Right.
Who should be able. So there was a lot of that. And you know, the manipulation just because the end goal would have benefited him greatly. And it was really toxic. It was really emotional. I went through the last straw because I went back 5 times And that's a lot what most people don't know.
It usually happens.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience.
Yeah. I read that it's 13 times. It takes 13 times for a woman to leave an abusive, or anyone to leave an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. So that was mind blowing to me. So I went back 5 times. And the last time I was dealing with a cancer scare, and I went to all of the appointments by myself. I was very sick for, a year and some change. And I did it all by myself. And my son at the time, he is a competitive sports shooter. So he had competitions and things like that. And I'm driving sick to take my son to these activities. And, you know, I had people really helping me. Thank God for friends that we had, really amazing friends there. But here I have a partner that could do all these things, and he wasn't doing that. And it was embarrassing. It was, you know, really tough. And what was the defining moment for me to leave was, you know, my son was now a young man, and my son, who's very protective of me, I didn't want to put him in a position where he felt like he would have to protect me and something bad would come out of that. And my son just said, Mom, I want you to be happy. And I know that this isn't making you happy, and this isn't good. And, you know, I don't want to be around here and see you getting hurt, you know. And the thought of losing my son, or him, you know, of course, him going to be with his dad no matter what, you know, that's his dad. But the thought of not having my son near me devastated me. And that was reason enough for me to leave. And I haven't gone back. So that was, you know, what my experience was like. And I'll share how I cope with it these past 9 months. But can you tell us a little bit more about what your experience was like?
Sure. Mine was very, very similar. And I know I talked about this more in depth, you know, on the first podcast that we did together. But through mine, I've gotten to a point where, you know, through forgiveness, you know, and understanding what, you know, more or less got my partner to that point, that that's the way that he handled things, it's been able to allow me to manage, you know, how to remain and have a relationship, you know, because at this point mine is, you know, my son's father. So, you know, it's allowed me to not take things personally, to know what's going on, you know, if something doesn't feel right, or I'm being made to feel that I'm crazy. I really do not believe that he's even aware of how he comes across, you know. And ultimately, you know, I played my own part in it. I stayed. I didn't have to, you know, and now that I've learned how to set, you know, better boundaries for myself, which actually didn't just, you know, help that relationship. It helped every relationship that I have, whether it be my family, my friends, you know, my colleagues, employees. By learning how to set better boundaries for myself, it helps increase my confidence. It helped make my relationship stronger, you know, including the one that I have with him now. And ultimately, everybody's benefited. But while I was in the relationship, I was not in a headspace that I was able to see what was going on and be able to more or less know it wasn't right and how to get out of it. It was really that therapist I was telling you about that was the one that was like, this is not right. You know, you shouldn't, you're not crazy. you know, that shouldn't have been communicated to you in that manner. So, and that was really a lot of what I was working on in those 6 months. While I was in therapy, it was, you know, unlearning all these ways that I was being treated and understanding that, no, that is not the way to be treated. And there are better ways to go about it. And this is how, you know, you find and allow people into your life that will either treat you better, or how to set your own boundaries. Because no matter what, we're going to encounter people like that through the rest of our lives, right? So we have to learn how to, you know, manage relationships with different types of personalities, whether it's a mental illness or not, and learn how to communicate with them in a manner that it's beneficial for us, and ultimately it ends up benefiting them as well. So,
exactly. You know, with that. Thank you. Your therapist is amazing. So I definitely am like, oh my God, I have to get their number. Like, you know, it's really great. I have really good fond memories of my first therapist, and she had a really great holistic approach to everything. And she still, you know, she was just an incredible part of my life. This was years ago when I was, you know, 18, 19. So I understand the value of that relationship too. A lot of ways that I coped and started to heal through this whole process was, you know, and I touched on this earlier this week, I did a live, was returning to myself. So I got really lost in taking care of someone else and wanting to see someone else's potential come into fruition. And that really wasn't my responsibility. And also realizing that I've always been the one to step up and go up, you know, above and beyond. And I wanted to get to a place where wherever I would be at in my life, it was time for somebody else to step up. And I know that's a little selfish, but it's totally okay to have that mindset, because you're taking care of yourself and you're being more discerning with who you let into your life and around you. So returning to myself meant, you know, a lot of meditation. My friend Elizabeth has this really great quote, and, you know, prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening to God.
Yes.
I really love that. So it was really learning to sit there and take it all. And we believe that meditation is about getting the thoughts out of our head, and it's not. It's about learning to sort of ride that wave of thoughts, and being able to do that was incredibly healing for me. Journaling was cathartic, because in my journal, I know that it's hard for people to journal. Like, people are like, ugh, I don't really want to journal. But, you know, it became cathartic because that was the safe space where I could say what I wanted to say, all of those awful thoughts that I was having about my ex and, you know, the stuff that I went through, and also the anger. It was a way to get out my rage, and it became cathartic. Also, you know, holding on to that spiritual practice that I developed, that gave me something to hold on to and to hope and have faith that I will get to where I want to get and need to get. I created a sacred space. And what I mean by that is that a lot of my life at the time was about, because we had a tiny house and a homestead, and, you know, I lived the country life, which I absolutely love, but it was about creating a space that was me, you know, and that meant, so my room became my sacred space. It has, you know, the guitar that I'm learning to play. I have no electronics in my room. I'm in my room right now. You know, the books that I love to read, a place for me to sit, a place for me to meditate, a place, you know, it became a sanctuary. And it's funny because everyone that comes into my room is like, oh my gosh, this is just, you know, so peaceful and serene. And I created a space where I could go to and just sit and, you know, go through my emotions and being able to lean into them. Another thing was getting a mindful connection to my body, mind, and soul. So being mindful about it. So sometimes we want to push through the pain and we want to say, no, 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 I don't want to feel this right now. I just want to get through this. And
repress, repress.
Yeah. Let's just not, you know, I want to get
do not so me.
It's hard, you know. So having that connection, I knew that there were days where, you know, work and my life and all of the activities I have in it were a great distraction, and that's what I needed. And then there were days where I just needed to sleep, rest, cry, you know, Netflix, Hulu binge, whatever I needed to do, and being able to lean into that. And, you know, some other things that have been helpful and techniques were also sound therapy. So I wanted to touch a little bit on that, because sound therapy, you know, when you hear a song and it makes you feel really good, and it just makes you feel, either motivates you or takes you back to a place, it's proof that sound is incredibly healing. It has just this power. And, you know, sound therapy is vibrational medicine. It's known to, and this is done in a meditative state, and it's known to help with stress, anxiety, depression. It was hard for me to sleep, you know, so it helps with that. Turning to, sometimes because you're going through this really difficult time in your life, you're not taking care of your body. So being able to take care of my body and choose things that were going to give me strength, energy, you know, the work that I do a lot also is with herbalism. So being able to tap into herbs that, you know, were antiviral to help me not get sick, because again, I was already depleting my body because I wasn't taking care of it, going through all of this, you know, boosting my immunity and my system, and being able to tap into all of these holistic things, but most of all, being able to return to myself and listen to my body, know my wants, set my boundaries, know my worth, what I wouldn't accept ever again. And like I told a friend of mine who's recently going through a very difficult time, is getting to a place where, you know, it's 1 second at a time, then 1 minute at a time, mm-hmm. you know, then 1 hour at a time, 1 day, and so forth. And these are some of the techniques that have helped me. What mm-hmm. were some of the techniques and tools you used to really get through this, you know?
Sure. No, it's interesting. Since I've started my coaching practice, I've kind of put a lot of thought into that. And I have, when it comes to mental wellness in particular, it's 10 specific pillars that I kind of talk everybody into doing it. It all kind of ties together. And these all help me through basically every challenge I've had, because I've been through, for those of you who are not familiar with me, in a span of 4 years, I had a miscarriage, an abusive marriage, I had a divorce, and then I lost my long-term post-divorce partner to suicide. So it was a lot of stuff within 4 years. And doing all of these following practices in some type of combination really, really helped me. So the first four are actually all physical health related. So very first thing, you got to be sleeping. You got to get good sleep. You got to make it a priority. You know, no, you know, sleeping pills. Not, you know, if you need to get, you know, darkening shades on your window, make sure you're not using your cell phone late at night. You know, set yourself a time limit. There are so many different things that you could do. Actually, I wrote an entire blog post on it. So if you're interested, there, you know, check my blog for how to get better sleep tonight is the name of the post. I provide tons of different resources so that you can get natural sleep as soon as possible. That's definitely first and foremost. Next up would be your nutrition. So our brains can only function as good as the fuel that we give our body to run, right? And a lot of people don't realize that certain emotional states, like anxiety in particular, for me, I discovered through an elimination diet that gluten makes me anxious. Wow. So by learning what your food triggers are and making sure, and you don't have to have any kind of specific diet. The big thing that I usually push is make sure it doesn't come out of a box, mm-hmm. you know, make sure it's food and it's a natural state, you know, or, you know, fresh produce, lean meats, you know, seafood, oils, nuts, you know, food in its natural form, the way Earth intended it to be, is not going to make you sick. It's very, very difficult to get sick off food the way that the Earth created it. So that's definitely the next one. Then exercise, you know, and I think a lot of people think exercise, oh, I got to join a gym. No, you can go for a walk for 20 minutes a day and it's still going to boost your, you know, your mood and elevate you out of a depression. That's like sometimes all it's going to take. So make sure you get out and you're doing some kind of an activity that you enjoy. It could be walking, it could be yoga. I don't care what it is. Just make sure you're doing something 20 minutes a day to move your body. Hydration is a big one. So those would be my four physical health. And just by doing those four will help if you're in a funk, right?
Yes.
if you want to take it a step further, a big one that I talk about a lot, I termed it purposeful solitude. Is the way that I work it. It's kind of the same thing, what you were describing as far as like, you know, developing that inner self-love. So in order to really learn to love yourself, you have to learn how to spend time by yourself and actually enjoy it. That's key first and foremost. So for so many people, they're lonely. Loneliness is really cured by embracing solitude, right? So the reason that you're lonely is because you don't like yourself and you don't like being by yourself. So you need to make time to actually find activities that you enjoy doing by yourself. And eventually the more and more you nurture that, and again, it's a practice. So it gets less and less uncomfortable the more and more you do it. So this was something I did, especially after my divorce, after my hot mess summer, when I decided, I'm like, this is just too much dating. I need to take time to myself. So then I had to learn not to look for company in somebody else. I had to learn how to do it myself. So I went ahead and I started picking activities. Like I always wanted to take a dance class. I always wanted to go to the movies by myself, little things like that. And a lot of the things that I learned I enjoy, I now do on a regular basis by myself to begin with. You know, I choose it over hanging out with other people because I have other options and it helps boost my self-esteem and so many other things. So purposeful solitude is one of them. I'm going to kind of breeze through some of the rest. We talk about journaling. Journaling is a big one. And one thing I wanted to point on, or touch on, I should say. So unlike you, I had difficulty learning to journal at first. It was not something I wanted to do. And I know a lot of people have asked me this and have felt the same way. So a lot of people, they feel that if they write it down on paper, that's going to make it permanent and forever. And they don't want to revisit it, you know, and reread it over and over and over again. And that was the way I felt. I'm like, if I put it on paper, that means it really happens. And that means that, you know, every time I read it, I'm going to relive everything that had happened. And that's not what happens. So when you write it down, it's almost like you can forget about it. It's gone. You have to get it out of your brain and into some other form. So journaling is one way to do that. I also talk about creative expression, which could be through painting, cooking, you know, writing, whatever it is that makes you happy, that is some form of creativity, works great for that. Meditation is a big one. Mindfulness, which is different than meditation. So let's point the two of those out. And I think I'm missing something, but I mean, that's the bulk of the 10 pillars that I usually go through.
I love that it's these steps. You know, sometimes we're feeling overwhelmed and we don't know. So that perfect guidance of, hey, let's try this, and going down the line and being able to find your center, and, you know, it allows you again to return to yourself. I love how you touch on being alone, because that's the hardest, you know. Mm-hmm. We want to fill that time with people or sometimes things.
Sorry, I just saw Andy.
Hi, Andy. And being able to, you know, it's a gift. It really is just a gift to be able to return to yourself and find a place where you are whole and in harmony. You know, I tell people that you can absolutely get to a place of wholeness, and they're like, no, that means you have to be perfect. I'm like, wholeness doesn't mean perfection. It means in harmony with yourself. And when you reach that place of harmony, you know your worth, you set your worth, and you know what you won't and will allow and what you're comfortable with. And it helps you learn to trust your intuition and listen to your body a lot more. So it's just a really great gift to yourself. You know, I know we're coming to a close, and I really want to touch on this last one, because it's hard. And, you know, a lot of people don't talk about it because it's very uncomfortable. You know, it's really hard and to revisit this and relive this. And, you know, I think you're an incredibly strong, amazing woman, because, you know, you are able to really just talk about it and, you know, talk about it, and also with such strength and such compassion and love, and just really able to help others. And, you know, so you lost your partner through suicide. And, you know, I have suffered with depression, and, you know, because I'm a very transparent person, I was actually hospitalized when I was 18 years old, because I had tried to commit suicide. I'm very thankful that I was found and I was taken, and it was just a catalyst for me really focusing on healing and just getting to a place of strength. And not everyone is that lucky, because no matter what, you know, this is so much more than all of that, you know. My ex, you know, who I was with for 5 years, despite the toxic relationship I was in, had lost his brother to suicide, and I saw the impact it had on him and also on his family. And, you know, it was tough because, you know, they'd never really dealt with it. So it became something that was toxic, as, you know, and difficult and for them. But being able to be there, and I hope that I have left him, even though we're no longer together, with, you know, was able to be there for him through that time. At the time, we also did a walk for the American Suicide Foundation. You know,
yes, I did that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a great organization.
It's an incredible organization. And to be able to meet so many people, again, it was hard, you know, to see that, but also it gave me such enlightenment, and to see just all of these stories and, you know, how it affects everyone. So I don't have much to say on that except that, but I know you have a lot to say. And I just was wondering if you could share with us how one can cope after losing someone, you know, to such a difficult thing, and how you get past that, and how you move on, and how you're able to honor their memory without, you know, you falling apart sometimes just thinking about it.
Sure. So speaking from the, you know, viewpoint of a suicide loss survivor, which is what I am, the biggest thing I had to realize, which I kind of knew early on, you know, because we had both talked about, you know, our own individual demons, you know what I mean? And he had his own and they were pretty dark, you know, and I was aware of that going into the relationship. You know, but ultimately, and this goes for any relationship that we are in, it could be your family member, it could be your lover, it could be, you know, your children. Ultimately, we have no control over somebody else's choices. We have to accept them for what they are. So, you know, in losing, you know, my late boyfriend to suicide, I know ultimately it was his decision. It had nothing to do with me. So that kind of helped me in a way. It's not that he took his life because he didn't love me. You know what I mean? It had literally nothing to do with me. It was his own battle that he was going through. And, you know, I wasn't the only one that was left behind. So on average, I'm not sure most people know this, but on average for every suicide loss, they leave behind 6 people. So that's family, friends, coworkers, people who are affected. So in 2017 alone, 800,000 people died by suicide. So that leaves 4.3 million suicide loss survivors. So it's definitely not a rare thing. You know, I think it's interesting to, you know, it shouldn't be difficult to talk about because more people have experienced it than not. You know, as I started talking, you know, and using my, you know, social media and other platforms to kind of create awareness about it, I find that majority of people reach out to me and they say, yes, I lost a brother. Yes, I lost a, you know, son. Yes, I lost a coworker. And the more that we talk about it, I think it'll make it easier for those that are in that dark place to then maybe step into the light and realize how many people that will be affected by their decision. Because I know from, you know, all the interviews that I've done on the subject, I have a podcast, you know, where I've interviewed a few, you know, suicide survivors, not even loss survivors, suicide survivors, that when you get into that tunnel, you're not looking at anything else around you. You're literally just looking for your pain to end, that emotional pain that we all try to run away from, you know, that's difficult to deal with. And really what ends up happening is, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So whatever, for the people that I've spoken to who survived, you know, they found that usually the next day, you know, they're in a very different headspace. You know, and whatever it was that was, they, you know, more or less can't believe that, you know, even a day prior they had anticipated or attempted or were going to try to do what they did. So I think a lot of it is mostly just education, you know, and I do think just in general as a society, we have to do more for mental health. You know, we're working ourselves to death where, you know, we have unrealistic expectations on relationships. We're allowing media to basically, you know, dictate everything we buy, yes, and who we talk to and what we do. And it's just, it's really craziness when you think about it. So as a society, we need more ways to be able to cope with our problems. And I'm really trying to, through my platforms and getting people to talk about their adversity and talk about their emotions and put in place, you know, easy and reasonable practices on a day-to-day and weekly basis to hopefully, you know, make a difference in the long run in everybody's mental health so that hopefully we don't get to a point where we have 800,000 people that are taking their lives every year because they can't manage it.
Exactly.
You know, it's such a tragedy, you know, and even though, you know, I lost my late boyfriend, you know, I am grateful at this point that I didn't just sit on it as being, you know, a victim. Because as a result, you know, of what happened, I've been able to change so many other people's lives as a result of getting involved, you know, and sharing my story and talking about it, which, you know, for that, I'm grateful, you know, for having his influence in my life, because I would not be doing what I'm doing today, you know, had he not done what he did. Granted, I would love to have him here today, but I do not regret at all, you know, having met him and having him in my life and having a relationship with him. I wish he was still here today, but I understand is the point. That's the big thing, the more the acceptance, you know, as being a survivor. And also as a survivor too, I wanted to mention, it's a very complex grief. It's not normal grief. So for, you know, people that lose, like, say, like a parent or a, you know, grandparent that, you know, is due to old age, you kind of know what's going to happen, or even a disease like cancer. you kind of anticipate that it's going to happen. Suicide is very sudden. It's usually unexpected. And you have the added kind of element in it that the person that you're supposed to be blaming is the person who took their life. Where if you're, you know, grieving somebody who passed away from cancer or old age, you know, you're the cause of it is not something that you could pin blame on, right? Nobody gets angry at cancer, you know, in general, but suicide is very different. So if you, you know, meet somebody that is experiencing a suicide loss, please be aware of that, because, you know, one of the things that I found probably, it wasn't helpful. I didn't want to say it was hurtful, but so many people were like, I know how you feel. I understand, you know, I lost, you know, my grandmother last year, and it's really not the same. You know, so just acknowledge that it's different, acknowledge that you're there for the person, just listen to them. That's the best thing that you could do for anybody going through any kind of grief or loss. They don't expect you to solve their problem, but just being there to listen to them and be by their side when they have no words to say can mean the world in the long run.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely encourage everyone to reach out and tap into in the first podcast, and I'll actually put it in, this will go into my IGTV, this video as well. So I'll put some resources in the description, but being able to reach out to resources that help you if you're going through depression, help you if you are trying to support someone that has, you know, been in the situation of losing someone, or, you know, being able to survive, you know, attempted suicide. You know, this is a really important topic. You know, mental health in our community, you know, we tend to shun people that have mental health issues, or we tend to, it's a hard thing for people to talk about. Or even, you know, I remember, you know, when my ex-husband, I was married to my ex-husband, you know, military men, women do not go to see therapists, because they, although it's supposed to be confidential, somehow the command will find out and things like that. So people are not often seeking help. So anyway, tap into these resources, you know, open the dialogue of communication, and, you know, being able to share your stories is deeply important, you know, and you know, important and valuable. And, mm-hmm. you know, so as mothers, you and I are both single mamas, and mm-hmm. we have been through some really tough things and experiences. I wanted to end on this because, you know, my son, he's 16, he's about to be 17. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I'm going to have a 17-year-old this year. But all of these lessons that I learned in my life really awakened me into, as a single mom and just as a mom, you know, I have never been a perfect mom. You know, you don't, there's no manual on how to be a good mother. You
right.
sort of, you know, you stumble along the way and you do a lot of things right, and you make a lot of mistakes, and that's part of the journey. So these are some things. Did that pause? There we go. I want, you know, to touch on what it's like to be a single mom and what all of these experiences left and the impact it has had on my son. So the first one was, you know, divorce. And I had a recent conversation with my son, and he said, and mind you, my ex-husband and I worked really hard to have a really strong foundation for him, blended family, and even like the same, I don't really have rules, but the same expectations, I guess, or, you know, the same things that we expect in my home, same would be in my ex-husband's home, so that it's always, you know, he has that, it's always the same. Nothing changes. It's not one parent against the other. But my son was talking to me. He said that, he, you know, how thankful he was that we were able to create this blended family, but that it was still very difficult for him. And that he feels like, and this was really hard for me to hear, that he would have been a different person had his father and I been together. But that he understood that things happened, and now he works even harder to make sure that he is a good person and tries to be the person that he's always wanted to be. So no matter what, you know, it still impacts, you know, your children. But what I've tried to do is always have open lines of communication with my son. I've never really hid anything from him. You know, there are layers, like I say, like you peel back certain layers as they get older to their level of comprehension and understanding, and just out of protection. I'm the last connection to my son's innocence. And what I mean by that is that I've created a safe space where my son can be a kid as long as he wants to be a kid and, you know, goof off if he wants to, or, you know, I've created this sacred space for him. And on that same page, I've had to prepare him for the world, you know, what's going on out there. And I've tried to educate him and help him break down the toxicity that he's going to encounter and that he still sees, you know, just, you know, from commercials or, you know, just from everywhere, it's out there. But being a mother has been a gift. He is the light of my life. It's also taught me about being strong for myself first, because if I'm strong, then I can be strong for my son. And also, you know, the responsibility as a mom to try and instill in him, you know, compassion, love, understanding. And, you know, when he's out in the world, I hope that I've left him with that. But it awakened me to just realizing that being a mom, there's no book. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to, but to create a safe space for your children where they can always come to you and talk to you, that you don't hide things from them, because kids know, like, they just absolutely know, and peeling back those layers. And, you know, it's just awakened me to be a different kind of mother through all of these experiences and, you know, in this next phase of my son's life, because he is, you know, 17 and growing. Mm-hmm. Yours is still a little one too, but even then you're still teaching them things bit by bit, piece by piece. What has all of these experiences taught you and your relationship with your son and, you know, as a mom?
Well, being a mother is actually the greatest surprise to me, because I was always under the impression, like, I had no self-confidence at all prior to having my son, that I would be a good mother. And it's one of those things that as soon as he was here, it was like, I knew what to do. There's no question. It was just easy. It's kind of what I was meant to be. And I mean, my situation's a little bit different in that, you know, I was more or less a single parent from when he was, you know, conceived, even though, you know, we were married, we were going through some really, really difficult times. You know, so as far, you were talking about this earlier with your, you know, your cancer, you know, and going to appointments by yourself and stuff like that. So I did all that for the most part by myself, with the exception of maybe like one or two times where he may have came with me, you know, as well as the birth I did myself. Wow. He's not there, which is fine. We had both agreed at the time that it was better for myself and for him and everybody involved. So it's okay. But just more to prove the point, the reason I share it is, you know, just that I don't know any other way, you know, than being a single mom. And my son doesn't really know another way either, because he was 5 months old, you know, when we had split up. You know, what he does know is he knows that he's got, you know, two parents that love him so much, that are both independently doing their own thing. And, you know, everybody is happy. And the number one thing that I try to teach my son is, you know, just, I really want to encourage him to remain in the moment, because children, they're naturally this way. They only experience life in the moment, and it's through, you know, their caregivers and their environment, that, you know, later on they start developing, you know, whether it be like fears of what might happen in the future, or looking too far in the future, or, you know, dwelling on the past. I really try to encourage my son just to focus on today and what's great today. And the one thing that I find so beautiful, I mean, this even happened just yesterday. I took him to swim class, mm-hmm. and I was stopped by 4 people at the swim facility on how happy my son was all the time. It just, I was like, oh my God, I love it that he has this like reputation for being, you know, the happy, outgoing, social, you know, little guy that he is. And he's only 4. So really, that's been my primary, you know, focus, you know, as he's young. And, you know, I practice what I preach. So I don't look too far into the future for him. I know he's going to be fine. You know, I'm teaching him all the skills that he needs to be able to problem solve on his own. And to build his confidence, you know, as he gets older, and actually, I don't want to say build his confidence, to keep his confidence, because right now he's pretty confident little guy. So, yeah, it's been an absolute joy. I wouldn't trade it for anything. My son's the best thing that ever happened to me. And for anybody that is on the fence about having kids, definitely have them. They're great.
You know, yeah. Worth every second. They're a gift. And, you know, I have so many memories that I've built with my son, and he's, also very much a traveler and a minimalist like me. So he's like, you know, he's ready to get out there into the world and experience things. So that does make me happy because, you know, for me, you know, traveling so much and being able to then, I've always done it with him. Like, we just pack up. Since I homeschool my son, we just pack up and go when we want to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's the greatest gift that you could ever experience. And it has made my life, you know, I feel like it has made my life just worth living every single day for that mm-hmm. little guy. You know, well, he'll always be my little guy, but right. he's actually 6 feet tall now, so he's much taller than me.
Is he that tall now?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And I'm so glad that we got to have these conversations. This will be published on the Beautifully Free podcast this Saturday. If you're listening to it now, you're listening to it live mm-hmm. this Saturday, but we're just, you know, I'm so glad that we got to have these conversations and really touch in. And we hope that we've left you with so many nuggets of wisdom, empowered you, uplifted you, and we're sending you so much peace, love, and light today. Did you have any last few words that you wanted to share?
No, sure. I just wanted to say, if anybody has any questions, definitely yes. feel free to reach out. You know, I'm here on Instagram. You can DM me, Twitter, Facebook. You know, I'm an open book, just like Bonnie Lee. So if anybody feels the inspiration that they'd like to reach out, I'm more than welcome it. So
yep, and it's at I am Corey CO. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's all of my social channels. I am Corey CORRIELO. I am Corey Lowe.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you, Andy. Thank you. Everyone, have a good day.
All right. Thanks. Bye, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.